little burr. I'm testing out my mic. It looks like it works just fine.
Everybody, and welcome back to another episode of Who Is My Doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed? I am your host, Zach, and I know a lot about Doctor Who.
And I'm also your host, Cassie, and I do not know a lot about Doctor Who.
And today we're looking at Series 4, Episode 11, Turn Left.
Right?
To the left, everything you own in a box to the left.
Right.
Yeah, those are the lyrics.
Yeah, right.
Today we are looking at, this is another part of those.
I just heard the bit fall out of the sky like Icarus with his wax wings.
Do you want to keep going with that bit for a little bit?
No, I just needed to comment on how I just heard a...
So last episode we looked at what was a companion light episode, which was just the doctor while Donna was having a little spa day.
Yeah, as I wrote in my notes... The doctor's equivalent of a beach episode, except not, because the doctor isn't allowed to have any beach episodes.
Instead, this is the reverse of that. This is the Doctor Light episode
Light.
Yeah, this is what Catherine Tate had been doing while David Tennant was stuck on a boat. Or stuck on the bus.
Yeah, stuck in a bus.
Stuck on the bus. Not necessarily what Donna was doing. This episode does take place, you know, after that episode, although not necessarily, because this episode is sort of a what if Doctor Who. You've seen
what if a la Futurama Solar Opposites, or what if a la Marvel?
I mean, both of those are those are all kind of the same thing.
But well, because like
it isn't a compilation like Futurama does, if that's what you mean.
Okay, or more or less a what if in the sense of. This is not something that is actively happening.
It is.
It is and isn't canon.
You'll sort of get it when you watch the episode. But for the Cassie Professy today.
Yes.
I would like for you to guess what the what if would be for this episode.
What the what if would be for this episode?
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to go back in time. Scrolling through my Doctor Who reels.
Yeah, so just to try and set you up for try and help you with a little bit of success here and to get your brain percolating in the right direction. I will let you know this. As I've said, this is a Doctor Light episode, so the Doctor is not in it much. This is mostly Catherine Tate. So in that context, what do you think would be an interesting what if for Donna Noble to be exploring?
The first thing that comes to mind is what if she and the doctor didn't bump into each other the second time.
Okay.
Because their meeting episode after her wedding, the entire first, like, third of it is all about them just barely missing each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that this has something to do with what if that meeting just didn't happen.
Okay, so you're thinking that the first Christmas special happens, but in the second episode, for whatever reason, the Doctor and Donna never meet up again at the beginning of the season.
Yes, but I also don't remember the terms in which they meet.
In the first episode? In the Christmas special or in the first episode of this season?
Yes.
So in the Christmas special, they met because the Doctor's TARDIS just... sort of sucked her up because she was covered in she was filled with these molecules that she shouldn't have had. And so the TARDIS sort of latched onto those and sucked her straight into the TARDIS. Option number two, which is the first episode, they were both investigating the same company and they looked at each other through the windows.
Okay.
Or as you had thought it at one point, a boat's porthole.
I don't think I'm wrong with that. It was a round window. A ship can be a building. You don't know.
Who is my doctor? A ship can be a building.
Yeah. Can I ask, does it have to do with turning left?
Yes.
Okay.
But not in a way that I think you could guess. Well, just because they haven't really told you what or who is turning left.
So this isn't fair then.
Well, that's why I will say I wouldn't ask you this question if you couldn't guess the question. I feel very confident you could guess it without knowing who, what or when the left turn happens.
What? Why? Huh?
You don't need to know the aspects of the left turn to guess the question. To guess the what if. So you would like to go with what if Donna never met up with the doctor a second time?
Yeah. That's all I've got, bud.
Okay.
I don't have a more creative, zany answer for you right now.
Okay. That's just I'm as long as I clarify that, we're all good to go. And so for the second prefacy, this one's a little bit more of a wild stab. But I'm going to give you a little bit just to help you out here. As you have heard in a previous episode, there is something on Donna's back. I will let you know it is a giant insect of some kind. I would like for you to prophesize what kind of bug that is.
What kind of bug?
Mm-hmm. Just for the sake of simplicity, I will tell you I am not including spiders.
Okay, because that was going to be my guess. Thank you.
Arachnids, insects specifically are what I'm talking about, so arachnids are not included in that.
Is it like one of the ones that I like, or is it one of the ones that I super don't like?
You know, I actually don't know.
Okay, so it's probably not a moth or a cockroach.
I don't know
my relationship with cockroaches is. I don't want them in my house. Please don't kill them, though. Me in the shower, cockroach also in the shower. Me going, oh, nuts. Zachy's back. Get the cup. Okay, so it's probably not one of those. Ugh. Let me ask you a follow-up question. What kind of bugs do you think I like? Or rather, what bugs do you think I don't like?
That's the thing is, we don't talk a lot about bugs.
I don't even think we've been in an environment where we could have a discussion of bugs.
Yeah, so
hasn't been one of our autistic conversations.
Yeah, so I don't know. If I had to guess, I think you would like this kind of bug. Like one of the actual bugs, not the Doctor Who-y kind. But I honestly don't know. If I was going to take a wild guess, I'd say, oh, Cassie probably thinks those kinds are cool. I think that's as far
as... What are your thoughts then on how I feel about millipedes or centipedes?
If I had to guess, I would say too many legs.
Okay, cool. That's exactly. They're very scary. My issue with millipedes is the same as your issue with snakes. But the it's opposite. The
equal and opposite.
Yes. Too many leg, or for you, it's not enough leg. For me, it's far too many leg. I'm going to say some kind of beetle.
Okay.
I like beetles. I think they're kind of cool.
All right, cool. So we will
My
go
with- favorite one used to be John. But lately, I've been feeling more like a Ringo.
Thank you. I really appreciate that.
Morning, you with peace and love. Yeah, but Ringo's my favorite Beatle now. despite my brown hair and pink glasses making me look not unlike a John.
All I'm hearing in my head right now is, who? I need somebody. Who? I need a doctor. Who? Not just any doctor. I'm very silly sometimes.
So a beetle.
All right. So Cassie's prefacy for today are that the bug on Donna's back is a beetle. And that the what if of this episode is that the doctor and Donna never reunited. We will find out together as we watch Turn Left.
Turn Left.
This episode of Who Is My Doctor is brought to you by Space Squared Warehouses. Space Squared Warehouses. Just listen to this satisfied customer.
Hello? Anybody? There's so much space in this space. I'm swimming in space. Hello? I don't know where my unit is because of all of the space. Is there a door anywhere? It's so white. Man, sure am happy here with no one else ever anyways. Just me and all of my stuff in the space.
Space Squared. It's like a vacuum for your vacuum. And we are back from Turn Left.
Bad Wolf.
That was dark.
Yeah. Like, I would... It would feel odd for Donna, or for Doctor episode and Donna episode, for them to be, like, extreme opposites.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember when I asked you what you thought the tone of Midnight was going to be?
Yeah.
And you thought it was going to be real lighthearted, like lighthearted build-ups to the finale.
Hey, in my defense, the very beginning of it is happy-go-lucky.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Like, this isn't me criticizing you. That's totally valid for you to expect the episodes before the finale to be lighthearted. It's just also really funny to know you said that and then see two of the darkest episodes the show ever has.
I mean, I liked it.
They're both great.
Because this one has the most Asian people I've ever seen in a Doctor Who episode.
Well, it is funny because the obvious
Asian coded, since they're clearly on some kind of different planet, since Donna says that she's
from some kind of
Earth. Another planet miles from here called Earth.
Yeah, it seems like it's probably some like future world's Chinatown.
Yeah, even still, but lots of Asian people.
Yeah, it's kind of funny, though, because I don't know if you recognized her without all the makeup on. We've seen that fortune teller before.
No, I did.
She was Chantho from Utopia.
I did recognize her.
Yeah, like I said, you don't recognize her when she's not a big bug lady. Instead, she's a
lady with a big bug. Yeah. It was more or less I clocked the, like, you're not like the others in the sense that it was like, I know you from something else.
Mm-hmm.
And then you saying that she is, yes, from something else. This very series makes sense, because the second she started speaking, I went, I know that voice.
In fact, she's from the same episode a season later, because Chantho was in the third to last episode of series 3. And now she's in the third to last episode of series 4. Just kind of an interesting little thing. And both times she is a woman with bug stuff. I don't know if that was on purpose or if that was happy accident, but it sure is kind of funny.
Yeah, it was probably a combination of them being like, oh, she was really good. Oh, let's call her back.
It's also like, oh, she was really good. We can call her back. And if we don't put the makeup on her, who cares? No one's like, she's clearly not the same character then.
Yeah. So same nobody. They did it with Capaldi.
Like, if I want to go really specific, they did it with Gemma Chan in the Marvel movies. She played Minerva in Captain Marvel, where she was a blue Kree. And then they went, well, she's not blue in this one, so they'll know she's not the same character when they cast her at Eternals. Just the exact same, almost the exact same thing, in fact. They hired an Asian woman, plastered her in blue makeup, and then went, well, we can do something else with her now. I mean, it is very dark, but I think, especially because of, like, knowing that it's not the typical show is what makes it really worth it. It feels unique.
Well, because I like to clock, or I like to point out any very good actor moments. Because Eccleston had quite a few. And I think that's just because he's a very good actor.
Yes, he's a very good
actor. This was one of the first times that I think I really was like, Catherine Tate has had some good moments, but this was one where it was like, whoa.
Where you're like, oh, she's can act.
Well, this is like believable to a point where I had to look away and write down my note, but I was like, I can't. Like, I'm starting to feel genuinely very sad.
Yeah.
Because it's also like, if we want to dive deeper into that, that feeling of I'm useless, I'm not special, I'm just a insert occupation. Very real for me right now in this moment.
Yeah.
So having somebody else who is, you know, at the very least at this time, 10 years my senior.
Something like that.
Maybe even more.
Yeah.
And still, even though it's like, this is a television show, I recognize that. The little empathy goblin in my soul likes to attach herself to things she watches on TV. And a relatable, usually funny woman that is having an existential crisis because she's quote unquote not special. That kind of hit home a little bit.
I mean, I just looked it up. At this time, she would have... Catherine Tate, the actress, was 40.
Okay.
But it is worth also pointing out that the other companions you've seen haven't really had opportunities to do that. Billy Piper, especially, was written more with a lot of melodrama in mind. A lot of very, like, teenager... A lot, almost like Twilight-y, for lack of a better term.
She's relatable to the audience that Doctor Who didn't know that they were
courting.
Yes.
Or if they did know, I don't think the executives knew that. I'm sure the executives thought, oh, we're courting, you know, boys who are into fun action sci-fi stuff. And they're like, no.
We're getting the emotional teens.
We're courting AO3, my friends.
We need the Tumblr girlies.
And then Freema Agyeman, also a very talented actress, but most of her opportunities were dealing with pining after the Doctor, which is, like, again, not the actress's fault.
She had a particular sadness about her.
Yeah.
In the, like, she had a particular sadness in the sense that she's having to compensate for having kind of a crappy family and being, you know, making herself proud and doing things to make herself proud and to win the favor of the Doctor, and, you know, spends her story arc just trying to figure out how to connect and communicate with somebody who is heartbroken after having lost somebody who I think you could argue is the love of his life, his very long life.
The love of his, that chunk of time.
Yeah, the love of his story arc in this moment.
Yeah, and then, but then you get Catherine Tate, and to the credit of the writers, it really seems like they wanted Donna to feel like a whole entity separate from the Doctor.
Yeah.
Because both Rose and Martha, you know, this isn't to say they're weak characters, but it is to say that a significant chunk of their character was tied into their relation with the Doctor.
Donna doesn't need the Doctor.
Yes.
Like, Donna doesn't need the Doctor. The Doctor doesn't need Donna. But they need each other in a way that is very...
Well, this episode kind of points it out here, is that without the Doctor, Donna feels incomplete. And that's not to say she feels like a weak character, but it is to say that she does not find her best self without the Doctor. And the Doctor also doesn't find his best self.
Because he's dead.
Yeah, Donna needed to pull him out of the moment where he watches the Spider Queen die. He needs a human companion to pull him back down. Because going back to that episode, speaking of, you didn't get the point, because it wasn't when they didn't reunite. They never united to begin with.
You know, I think I can argue that point.
I mean, I guess didn't reunite.
Yeah, it has everything to do with, it is because the Doctor and Donna did not converge. Their timelines did not converge because she turned left instead of right.
She turned right instead of left.
Yes.
Yeah. Turn. Yeah. She needed to. She was going to turn left to go to the temp job.
So I think that this can, if you're going to be a prick about it, go into the into my little into shaker your, bottle of
into the the jar of broken points.
Yes. I think that this counts. I don't know how we're keeping track of those.
I'm just trying to keep it's more a vibe than a hard number.
When this I feel, goes towards my Kazi Profassi XP.
Exactly. You don't get a full level, but
because I was on the right track.
Yeah.
I knew that. I just didn't. In my defense, there were two different opportunities for them meeting to have happened.
Yes. You hit.
So I was in the right ballpark. You being Mr. Specific Pants over here.
Specific Pants.
Are not giving it to me because I needed to shoehorn it into a specific time and place or else my vagueness wouldn't have gotten me the point either.
I kept wondering if you were going to like pull it because you seemed like you were questioning what else it could have been. And I had wondered if you were going to fish it back even further and be like, wait, no. They never met at all. Because it seemed like you were about to do it. And I'm like, I want to make you do it and make you feel like I gave it to you. But I also because you were very close. So I will definitely put it in your.
Were you in grade
on your boulevard of broken points
when you were in grade school? Did the kids in your class make squishies?
No.
So the kids in my class, we would make squishies. What a squishy basically is a reconstituted eraser where you take all of your eraser shavings and then you squish them back together. Yes, they have the pencil lead in them and it changes the color of your fingertips, but you're basically making another eraser. Sometimes people would just get completely clean erasers and, you know, just roll them off and then roll those up together. That's what we're working on right now. This is an eraser shaving, one eraser shaving in my Kazi Profassi squishy.
And we know we'll know what we're done with that squishy when
nothing, when we're done. We never know. You never know when it's done.
It's entirely a vibe.
9 times out of 10, I would make really awesome, impressive ones. And then somebody would come by because mine were really smooth because I would really work the hell out of it. Not autistic, but it was really nice having something that I could just kind of stim with in class. Just when none of my teachers were like, ooh, she might have issues. But because of that, because mine were really nice, people would take them. And because I would have it in my little desk, just out in the open. So that way it was always easily accessible. And then I would come back from break and it would be gone. So thieves.
And it will be my squishy.
Yeah. But it never was because people take it because children are evil and cruel. They take things that don't belong to them.
Squishy is the process. Don't bring me squishy. Bring me squishy.
But the important thing about the Don and the Doctor never meeting is that it also means that he never meets Martha Jones because the Doctor dies before that whole season happens.
I forget. Was there a reason why Sarah Jane was allegedly in the hospital? In the hospital?
So Sarah Jane was not in the episode. The premise that they're going with is basically in the absence of the Doctor, Sarah Jane and Torchwood have taken up the mantle of trying to do what the Doctor did.
Okay.
And the reason for that is because at this time, the other two Doctor Who spinoffs, Torchwood and the Sarah Jane Adventures, were happening at the same time. So the reason I tell you that is because there were a handful of times where they start rattling off names of characters you have never met.
Yeah.
Those are characters from the spinoffs.
Okay. I thought so. And I went, these are important in another world and another time and another place.
Yeah. Because you heard the name Sarah Jane. You knew that. You heard the name Jack Harkness. You knew that name. That is because they are the lead characters of those spinoffs. The other characters around them were other names mentioned around those names were their spinoffs.
What's the spinoff that Sarah Jane is part of?
She's in a spinoff called The Sarah Jane Adventures.
I know that. It was an obvious answer. I was trying to do a joke and it didn't work. Moving on.
Well, we haven't talked about it much. In that one,
yes, we have K-9, bitch.
Well, K-9, that's not Canine Show. Canine Show is Australian.
Yeah, but Canine was in Sarah Jane Adventures.
No.
What?
You know, Sarah Jane Adventures is Sarah Jane with her adopted son and his friends.
Her adopted son, K-9.
No, not her.
Keenan.
Not her adopted boy, her adopted son.
Yeah, Keenan, K-9.
No, that show is more geared towards children than Doctor Who is. And right under the fact that Sarah Jane is sort of this adult who manages a bunch of kids and they all go on sci-fi adventures.
Oh, so you mean Me at Work?
Yeah, exactly. So whenever you heard names mentioned, that was what happened.
Okay.
But yeah, so the premise was basically that because they're doing their own adventures in these other shows, clearly they would try and take up the mantle of the Doctor, and they cannot do it. The world needs the Doctor. Which is, and, you know, an interesting concept for sure. Especially, it really makes you realize just how important what the Doctor does is.
Yes. Because I did write down the list of things that happened because the Doctor wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Rose, the Doctor dying at what I've just dubbed as the Christmas Day Massacre.
Oh, yeah.
Sky Star Web.
Yeah, the spider attack.
I didn't have a lot of room.
You had so many words for it, but not enough space.
Yeah. And then the hospital disappearing.
Yeah, then the hospital disappeared.
The Titanic in space.
Ooh, that's, you know, you're not wrong. That Titanic did do a 9/11 on London.
Uh-huh.
The Titanic was a big one. That one landed on London because if you remember, it was crashing into Buckingham Palace.
Yeah.
And it didn't, but the Doctor was there to pull it up at the last minute, but the Doctor wasn't there this time. And it makes a mushroom cloud.
Well, yeah. And then they talk about how they can't go back into London. I can't speak today. That nobody can go back into London because of the radiation.
Yeah, they can't go back into London because of the radiation. The radiation cascading through all of southern England. 7 million people have to be displaced, not even accounting for all the people that are dead in London, including the Queen herself.
Presumably.
The Queen, Parliament, the Prime Minister, all those are based in London. The British government is destroyed from that.
Oh, no. The Harry Potter London tour is gone, too. Ah, nuts.
Yeah. And then so they are forced.
The models of the Great Dining Hall blown to smithereens.
But
the broom riding experience gone
through all of these.
The Sorting Hat.
Through all these little vignettes, one Rose Tyler keeps popping up because something is wrong with the universe. I guess you've never caught that song before because you kept laughing at it. That has been the 10th Doctor's theme. They just haven't played it a whole lot. It's a very, like, if you really look at it musically, it's basically the Doctor Who theme, but it's been modulated slightly, so it's clearly much sadder than the actual theme.
TBH, my guy, I didn't connect the fact that each individual Doctor had their own theme.
Well, that's the thing. They haven't yet. 9 and 10 share a theme.
Well, how was I supposed to know?
Well, that's the thing. Well, because they only play it for Doctor moments.
To be fair, in my head, it does sound almost
mm-hmm.
like the song that plays in Moulin Rouge.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's Nature Boy.
Yeah, Nature Boy.
It sounds just enough like it that my brain goes, they're together.
Well, you'll really notice it when we get to Matt Smith, because Murray Gold fucking nails it with Matt Smith's theme and plays it as much as he can to the point where you might be a little sick of it by the end of his run.
It's just to love. Ah!
Yeah, if you listen to the notes, it's
ooh.
So it's
and
the
be loved. Yeah, so it's in return.
Yeah, it's a lot. It's a modulation of the Doctor Who theme. I don't think Bailey likes your singing.
No, Bailey really does not like when I sing.
I've never been able to figure out why. Because I used to play, like, when I was really stressed out and having a rough time, I would play my ukulele.
Mm-hmm.
Like any white girl in the mid-aughties should do.
Hear that, white girls in the mid-aughties?
Mm-hmm.
Get yourself a ukulele.
Yeah. Take a note from one Colleen Ballinger, bitches. Make your apology song.
Oh, man.
Anyways, so I would play my ukulele when I was really going through something just to kind of help, like, get stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I did, I would sing and she would jump up in my lap and put her paw on my mouth.
Stop. Do not yeah. do.
If there is
this thing you are doing, do not do.
If there is a more clear sign to stop singing, it's having your cat put her paw on your mouth while you are mid.
Mother, could you please put a sock in it, perhaps? So in each of these little.
So the doctor's theme doesn't get really solidified until Matt Smith.
Well, they don't start having a different theme for each doctor until Matt Smith. At the moment, 9 and 10 share a musical theme. 11 will have his own musical theme. 12 will have his own. 13, so on. 11's is really prominent. And you'll know it as soon as you hear it. You'll be like, oh, they're going to keep using that.
If I pay attention enough to it, sure.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to look back because I remember pointing out that Rose had been on different screens.
Yes.
Specifically saying, Doctor!
Yes.
Were the moments that we saw those screen caps these same, like cataclysmic events?
So what she explains in this episode is that she's basically because of the event of this episode in Turn Left that kills the Doctor, it basically sends this shockwave through the multiverse that lets Rose finally able to travel between worlds sort of uncontrollably. Like, she has a little bit of control over it as in the sense that she knows she knows when she'll be back in places, but she doesn't have control. She doesn't seem to be like in a machine that lets her travel. She's just kind of moving and then she'll move to another world.
Kind of like a Kia Soul.
Yeah, not even that. She's just walking through doors.
She's just kind of appearing through balls of light.
Yeah, it's a little vague the way she explains it, but basically the events of this have ruptured the multiverse and Rose can travel through those.
Well, because Donna having the psychic reading,
mm-hmm.
she has created a parallel world.
Yeah, she's created
a parallel world has appeared around her.
She has created Donna's world, as it is called, because we have Pete's world where Rose was, and now around this has created Donna's world.
God, Donna's world sucks.
Donna's world sucks.
Donna's world, because when last we left, the Twintanic crashed into London.
Yes.
And then 60 million people dead in the United States because of the
adipose went to the U.S. instead of the U.K.
Which I know I had made that point, that is a much better place to send a fat created alien species.
Yeah, they gobbled up Texas.
60 million people feels too low.
I think, I mean, I'm going to double check this, but I think that might be a quarter of the U.S. population.
That feels too low because the way that they market the adipose is that it is
never mind. Actually, there's 333 million people in America. So
yeah, that feels too low because the way that they market the adipose, you know, to the buying consumer is that it is a like cheap, easy to use weight loss method. So unless it was marketed like Ozempic, where you could only afford it if you make more than $1,000 in a biweekly paycheck.
Well, it also could be that it only went to it only it,
because it, I'm also thinking, and nothing against the original appearance of the adipose. You know that if it came to the U.S. there would be so many doctors that would get some kind of cut
mm-hmm.
from Mama Adipose herself.
Yeah.
Saying, here, if you tell your patients that it'll cure their diabetes, oh.
Yeah. I will also say that there's a possibility. I don't know how true this would be in the, because I don't know how to compare it to the UK government, but there's a possibility that because of the US medicinal regulations being as strict as they are, that they just couldn't get to as many people in as much time as they could in the UK. I don't know what the process is for the US.
Marketed it as a holistic remedy that you didn't need a prescription for.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. Maybe that's how they did it. Maybe they advertised it as
working down as much magnesium glycinate as I can, because apparently it's supposed to help me with my stress and anxiety and ashwagandha. Cause you know, that shit's making me numb as fuck. I feel nothing. It sucks. I love it.
So there's a very real chance they could be advertising it as some kind of homeopathic thing, and that's why people aren't like leaping at it, because a lot of people don't trust homeopathic medications.
Yeah, it depends where you are.
Yeah, so there's a very real chance that's why it only hit 60 million people. But still, 60 million people ain't nothing. That's still a fifth of the country.
How many people died during the pandemic? Like in the thick of it?
When there have been over 1 million confirmed COVID-19 deaths in the U.S.
Okay, so maybe 60 million is still an accurate number.
Yeah, well, as I say, it depends. It really depends on how it was distributed, all these things. But they might not have sent it very far, so that one lady could keep all the adipose in, like, her. Like, they may have just sent that to Texas.
I was going to say that very likely could have just gone to a state.
Yeah. Or like one region, and they just
Texas, LA County.
Yeah. So then they may have just like kept it like close together there. Yeah. They fed it to a bunch of celebrities.
Yeah. You tell one influencer that you have a way of helping them lose weight overnight.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you saw it happened with, oh my God, what's her name? Legally Blonde.
Renee Zell? No.
No, not, no.
Not Renee.
In Legally Blonde.
Reese Witherspoon.
No, the character. It's not Brooke Shields. Because that's an actual human being.
Oh, you're saying the character in Legally Blonde?
Yeah, not Elle.
Not Elle?
Hold on. Pause for me getting the name right. You're singing the song!
Brooke Wyndham.
Thank you. I knew it was a Brooke.
Yeah. It took me, I had to like think through part of Legally Blonde, the musical, to get there.
But think about it. She was a fitness influencer,
mm-hmm.
sold millions of DVDs, didn't kill her husband because she was getting liposuction.
Well, I mean, even if you just think about, there are so many fitness influencers on Instagram that have fake butts. Like, more than anything, that seems to be the most common thing I have heard, is that Instagram fitness influencers have fake butts.
Yeah. The BBLs, baby.
Yeah. So it's so when you think about, you could advertise something very similar but in a pill form, so they don't have to get invasive surgery. Yeah,
in a pill form where the fat just walks away.
Yeah. Somewhere Chris Evans was just turned into a pile of little blobs.
Ugh. I think about it, though. So like, if there was a pill where my, like, 15 pounds could just up and
leave. We've lost all the Chris's to these pills.
Oh, man.
Except maybe Hemsworth. Hemsworth seems to be a bit of a freak. He might not have. Hemsworth
would have been in Australia.
That's true.
He's immune.
That's true.
He's safe. We are so off topic.
We are so off topic. And
then the Atmos, the Centauri invasion. Yeah,
then the Centauri invasion happens, and Donna and Martha are not there to help, so Torchwood has to do their job.
Torchwood blows itself up in the ship.
And throughout this story, we're watching Donna's life get progressively worse.
Progressively worse to the point where they are living in a flat with, like,
with two other families.
Two other families.
Yeah.
Two other non-English families.
Yeah. We know that at least one of them is the one we mainly see is Italian.
We know this because Donna calls him Mussolini.
Well, he also speaks with a very thick Italian accent.
I love him, though. He's so sweet.
Yeah, he's a very sweet man. And well, because it starts with Donna getting the job that she turned right for, getting a promotion, getting a lot of money. She went from $20,000 to $23,000 a year. And then immediately after that, and the doctor dies, everything goes to shit for her, too. She loses her job.
Well, because her job loses half of its business because it can't cross the fucking river.
Yeah, it can't cross the Thames. Then Donna gets told, as Donna's packing up all of her things, one thing that she slips into her box, or I think it's implied that Rose might have slipped it into her box, is a raffle ticket that wins her family a trip for Christmas to an I was a little unclear where it was.
It just kind of looks like a B&B, like,
yeah,
far away.
Yeah, but because the cleaning staff there only spoke Spanish, for a moment I thought it was Spain. But then when they come out, you can clearly see there's just like a look over that bridge and you could see the mushroom cloud that is London. So I assume it was just maybe it was just like North England somewhere, because they also said that South England is radiated. So maybe it's just North England somewhere. And then they can't go home because their home has been turned into glass. And then they get put into a hostel for a little while. And then from that hostel, they're moved to Leeds. And in that house in Leeds, they share it with three families.
Where they're living in the kitchen.
Where they're both sleeping on the kitchen. And Wilf is sleeping in the back closet of the kitchen. He's sleeping in the pantry.
I'd sleep in the pantry.
Man, Wilf, every good thing happens to you in this world.
Yeah, you need hot, you have the stove. You need cold, here's the fridge.
One of my favorite things for Wilf is when they show up to their Christmas getaway and he's wearing two sets of antlers.
Because he couldn't decide. He was so excited.
He didn't know which one was his favorite. He didn't want the other one to feel left out.
I love him.
He's such a good man.
Sweet, sweet man.
And then, you know, they keep talking about how America's going to help. And then the adipose hit. So America's not going to help.
America super cannot help now.
And then because of the lack of jobs and the trauma that the country is going through, fascism comes to town.
Yeah, they whisk away all of the they say
they have to go because they're claiming England is for the English, but they can't cross into the country because the ocean is closed, I think is what they said.
Mm-hmm.
So England for the English means get rid of all the not white people.
But they're gonna have jobs like sewing and digging holes.
They're going to a labor camp, and as Wilfred puts it, labor camps. That's what they called them last time.
Yeah, another very good actor moment.
Yeah, oh, Jesus Christ, Bernard Cribbins. Like,
which in that moment I went, oh.
So also, no. Also, Bernard Cribbins started acting in the middle of World War II. So it's not just like, he's not just having to act. He is getting to channel part of his actual upbringing. Yeah. Where he says, when he gets to say labor camps, that's what they called them last time.
Oof.
And it's not just Bernard Cribbins, the actor playing, I'm blanking on his name right now, but the actor playing the Italian dad also does, like, when he's with Donna, he's like, oh, I'm going to miss your lovely hair on fire. I'm going to miss you so much. I'm going to kiss you too many times. And then as she's talking about labor camps, he and Wilf are looking at each other and they very clearly know what is actually happening and they do not want to tell Donna.
I mean, Donna's clever enough. She figures it out very quick.
Well, as soon as Wilf says that's what they called them last time, she's like, oh, shit. And she goes chasing after the truck to try and stop it. Just like almost out of like moral impetus. I really appreciate those two actors having that moment where they're like, things sure are going to be okay. And they're like, they're just two grown men trying to hold it together for their family. And neither of them is doing very well.
Well, it's especially, isn't that the moment where Donna says, yes, she will help?
No, Rose? the moment Donna says yes is,
oh, the sky
is that night when they're looking up at the telescope and the stars start going out.
it's a TV show, but you look at stuff like that and go, wow, this year could be a whole lot worse.
Right? I mean, just the pants-shitting terror of looking up at the sky and watching the stars flicker out.
I mean, that happened to me once, but that's because one of the stars was an airplane and the other was a UFO. Separate occasions.
Yeah, it's one of those where, like, if you really sit with it, you're like, oh, especially because they show it to you and they do it well where it's never just a single star. So it doesn't feel like twinkling lights. It's like a constellation at a time. It's like Orion goes out and then this chunk and then that chunk. And you're like, oh, because then you remember the show isn't just the Doctor saving Earth over and over again. The Doctor saves all these planets.
Mm-hmm.
It is kind of sad to also think back to Silence in the Library and remember that, you know, she didn't want the Doctor to die then. This Doctor died a year and a half earlier than that.
Yeah.
There's this River Song that is never going to meet her Doctor now in this timeline.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a whole other, like, fuck. Like, it's not even brought up in the episode, but if you... It like was have just recently watched it. It can hit you all. It can hit you in a whole other way.
Mm-hmm.
Don is finally willing to accept Rose's help after having been very resistant to it because Rose has not told her her name.
Which also seeing her it back. I miss Rose.
Really?
I don't know. There's something about Billie Piper. I just really like her.
Well, she's a very captivating actress for sure. And she's gotten better with age too. Like she's become a very like engaging performer.
Well, especially since in this she's not telling anybody her name.
Yeah.
Like even the people who are helping her with this cause, mm-hmm. the military, she's not telling them her name because saying a name could whatever her.
Well, she's also almost militaristic in her own way. And something about being away from the Doctor, but having experienced the Doctor has turned her into this very like.
Well, because also momentarily she was the TARDIS.
Yeah. So there's a very.
So I'm sure that there is just a residual in the Doctor's absence.
Mm-hmm. She feels an obligation to mm-hmm. take the reins. It's very interesting to see the character go through that kind of an arc. So Donna and Rose meet up. And they have a big circle of mirrors. So, and the circle of mirrors.
Which also, congrats to the circle of mirrors and having no camera get caught in one of them.
Right? Or if there is, we certainly didn't see it.
Nah.
Maybe if you went frame by frame, you'd find something. But they did a really good job with those.
Yes.
But these mirrors are hooked up to the TARDIS, which that's another fun thing. Not many actors get to react to the TARDIS twice. Most of them get it. Most of them just get to go, it's bigger on the inside. And they're done.
How'd that go, Zach? One more
it's
time?
It's bigger on the inside!
Once more with
it's
gumption.
It's bigger on the inside!
Okay, that's better. Thank you.
Most of them just get to do that once, but you get to hear Donna go, no way!
And then run out and look around it.
Like a teenage boy seeing boobs for the first time. Shh. No way!
Well, it's also the fact that she doesn't say anything but no way, but you can... We know.
Mm-hmm.
We're smart enough to know that I forget how it went, Zach. That it's
bigger on the inside.
Thank you. So it was just really nice, though, to see Donna react very much like a child,
mm-hmm.
like a child who didn't know that polar bears were real, and then is seeing them for the first time at the zoo. It's like, are you seeing that? Oh my god.
Me, so big.
Yeah, me seeing otters at Disney World a year ago going, oh, they're real.
So the circle of mirrors is hooked up to the TARDIS and the TARDIS is dying on the inside, which
it's dying on the inside.
And except for when Rose like reaches out and pets it and it makes a purr like a very old cat.
Yeah. Is the TARDIS a cat?
It's, you know, sometimes it feels like it.
It's very cat. It
because it seems
does.
To give no fucks what the Doctor wants. It will just go
no,
wherever it
does
pleases.
Wherever it likes. It only responds to certain people. It has so many hidden things all around the house. Do you know how many hair ties must be in the TARDIS?
I mean, if you remember the hair on like on some of these doctors.
Like, yeah. Like, do you know how many hair ties?
Pertwee and Baker, like their
hair. How many
hair
ties and bottle caps are just hiding in the TARDIS?
And so they turn on that TARDIS. Or not, they don't turn on the TARDIS. Sorry. They turn
they
on
pet the TARDIS.
Yeah, they pet the TARDIS. And then they turn on the circle of mirrors with Donna in it. So that Donna can finally see the big beetle on her back.
She can see that.
And as soon as you start hearing its noise, I loved hearing you get super excited that you got the point and then immediately like bothered by the noise it made.
I hate it. I hate it because that is the same noise I would do to my sister to really get on her nerves too.
And I love that for some reason it just, because of where they put it, the puppet looks like it's eating her hair.
Well, it's because it keeps moving its little head and mandibles back and forth.
Yeah. Hey, everybody, how's it going? I'm Mr. Beetle here on your back.
Well, and then
enjoying the taste of this delicious, delicious timeline.
But it's also the fact that it made a particular noise that went a little something like this, which is really gross.
You and I were just giggling the whole time. It's just, hey, everybody, it's me. How's it going? Thanks for having me here.
It was very Beetlejuice.
Man,
in
this,
that
this hair you're going really tasty.
Well, because it shows him, and then it just has the same energy as the beetle that's sitting on the couch in the movie. Mm-hmm. He looks up from his magazine and just goes, hey, how you doing?
And so they tell Donna they're going to send her back in time, back to the moment where she had turned right, and she has to figure out a way to get Donna to turn left after all. And so they get this like jacket on her that's just got wires coming out of it.
Yeah, it's a very Bella Swan like twill jacket.
Yeah, and they're explaining all these like different little sci-fi things they're attaching to her, and then they hand her a glass like, this is for dehydration, and I think it's just a glass of water.
It is just a glass of water. It's my favorite joke in the whole thing.
And so that they put her in the circle of mirrors again, and they're going to send her back in time, and all in pictures that will be like, hey, where are we going? We're going for a nice little trip.
Well, it's bright.
Gonna go get a snack, because I'm enjoying the taste of this shampoo you got going on back here.
Time snack.
Time snack.
My favorite.
Donna gets sent back in time. And she has to find
a
way.
She won't die, right?
Yeah.
She'll live.
You just mean this world's gonna end because
I'll live,
I'll be the
right?
doctor. And Rose is like, I'm sorry.
I'll live, right?
Because we do have a finale coming up.
I know. Because in my head I went, ah, yes, because she has to.
Although we've also found that Rose has just described, this is how I died. What she means is, this is how I got stuck on a parallel universe with my happy family.
This is how I died.
So, who knows what she means this time?
You melodramatic fuck. No, but in this one, Donna just keeps going, I live. I don't die.
Yeah.
And then Rose just gives her the equivalent of the, like, say nothing, but also if this was in text format, it would be the little like shruggy emoji. Just sorry.
And so Donna gets sent back in time, and she's half a mile away
and has like less than 10 minutes to get there.
Yeah, so she just starts sprinting. She just hoofs it.
It was very it was giving, I'm at the wrong gate at the airport. The plane is boarding.
And Donna's bright idea to stop her from turning right is to jump in front of a van
and kill herself.
Yeah. And so, you know, Rose is right. She did have to die.
Yeah, but I'm just worried that this won't be the only time Donna has to die.
I guess we'll find out, won't we?
Ugh, late eventually. Mm-hmm. I do just want to comment, backpack beetle. Backpack beetle.
Backpack, backpack. I'm the beetle eating all your hair and timeline too.
Backpack, backpack.
Yeah. How you doing? And so Rose starts being like, so you're going to go back to the doctor now, and you're going to tell him everything that happened. Make sure you tell him these two words.
The two words were, ah!
The two words were unlimited breadsticks.
The two words were your name.
The two words were, damn it, Simon and Garfunkel.
The two words were tits and ass.
The two words were bite me.
Ooh. I mean, not far off. It was Bad Wolf.
Yeah, the two words were Bad Wolf. And when, and so when she appears back in the tent at the fortune teller, the beetle falls off her back.
Dies.
And the fortune teller's like, what will you be? What will you be?
Yeah,
like,
it's a little on the nose for me.
It's a little forced.
Yeah, what are you is one thing. Like, okay, yeah, she's...
Yeah.
This is a con that typically works for people, but not Donna. So saying, what are you? Very...
So this...
Okay, what will you be made me go...
This is
foreshadowing in a way that is just kind of stupid.
Yeah. So the doctor points out that the beetle is part of what's called the Trickster's Brigade, which, aside from being a mouthful, is another weird reference to the Sarah Jane Adventures, because the Sarah Jane Adventures, one of their big bads is the Trickster, who is a guy without a face. I'll show you pictures of him later.
Okay. Neil Patrick Harris, when he's a big bad, that's not Trickster, is
no.
it? Okay.
No. The Trickster is a villain from the Sarah Jane Adventures. Basically, he's just a guy that really wants to fuck with the doctor.
Yeah, no face.
Yeah.
He eats all of the townspeople in exchange for
gold. His whole ethos is that he really wants to fuck with the timeline. And that's why the creature they dispatch in this episode is a bug that creates a parallel time. It doesn't really matter, as evidenced by the fact that the episode worked just fine. And it's just an explanation at the end of why they did this.
It's just a treat. It's just a treat for anybody who watches the Sarah Jane Adventure.
Exactly. It's exactly what it is. And so they...
Speed of treat. I have an almond croissant in the fridge. Yum, 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 yum.
And so Donna starts telling the doctor about everything. And
it's like a dream.
Yeah. And then Donna tells her the two words that...
Well, Rose she says her. That that's what she like. That's what she said about me, too. I'm brilliant. Who's she? I don't know. She didn't give me your name.
What does she look like? She was blonde. And you could see the doctor like blonde.
Well, it was the
it's like a dog when you start putting your shoes on. Like it doesn't necessarily know that you're going for a walk yet.
Dog has a solid idea what's about to happen. Yeah. Though.
The dog knows that, hey. Plenty of blondes out there. The doctor knows that there are plenty of blondes out there, just like your dog knows that there are plenty of times you put your shoes on. Not going to take the dog out for a walk. But then he goes, what did she say? And he goes, bad wolf. He goes, go for a walk.
Outside. He bolts outside, and sure enough, Bad Wolf has now been plastered all over the town.
Yeah, all over the town and all over the TARDIS.
All over the TARDIS, all of the flags feels like the wrong word.
Banners.
But like,
oh, there are definitely some flags, but they're also like
flags,
banners.
Flags, pennants, banners, all of them that were in some kind of like Cantonese or, you know, Mandarin. Kanji.
Yeah.
Some form of like.
I think they were going for a Chinatown, so I'm going to assume it's Cantonese or Mandarin.
But irrespective, some form of. Written language that is not Latin-based.
Yeah. Are now suddenly all saying bad wolf. Bad wolf. Bad wolf. Bad wolf.
Bad wolf. Bad wolf.
But I thought we were going for a walk.
Bad wolf. Bad wolf. What you gonna do? What you gonna do when Russ comes for you? And bad Donna, wolf. Bad wolf.
Donna asks what bad wolf is, and he says it's the end of the universe.
Duh.
Which... Doctor, that's not Bad Wolf. Bad Wolf is your girlfriend.
Bad Wolf and Rose.
That was one of my favorite moments, was when Rose asked, you and him, were you like, and she does not answer. Don is basically asking if Rose and the Doctor were like, were you boyfriend, girlfriend? And I'm just like, I mean, she wasn't talking about his hair because she didn't pull at it.
I mean, frankly, even when she said, oh, he's got great hair. He's got great hair. I went, that's a sign of somebody who really loves and cares about another person is when they just can't stop talking about their hair. Also, Zach, you have great hair.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's just really good. A little sweaty, but that's fine.
I am very sweaty right now.
What?
We should probably wrap this up.
What do you
up.
Mean? You're not super comfortable and cool on our polyester velvet couch? Very breathable.
Well, you know, maybe I'll be cool on the next episode of Who Is My Doctor?
That was the worst transition, buddy.
I thought it was pretty good.
No.
Who there, is my doctor?
Who is there anything else anybody needed to say?
Was there anything you needed to say?
I'm just really happy to see Rose. I'm just going to think about that. I'm just going to talk about Rose's hair. Her little gold eyeshadow is so pretty. I don't know. They had that in Parallel Worlds.
Like shockingly full lips.
Oh my God. And like chiseled like jawline. Like I'm sure that this is a mark of either she's going through something because she looked a little bit skinny to the point of like... Could be dangerous.
I mean, she's gone through a lot
at that point, though.
Yeah. I mean Billy Piper.
Yeah,
yeah, Billy.
It was
Billy
just Piper, really nice seeing her again. It was like seeing a friend.
Yeah, Billy Piper went through a lot of relationship with much older men. And yeah, that's never a that, yeah. Like no critique of people who make that work, but it's not always a good sign, especially when it's repeated. It's a sign of a lot of like abuse from men. If not physically, at least emotionally.
Daddy issues. Instability in the family.
Well, also, I became famous way too young.
Yeah.
Who is my doctor?
Who is my doctor?
Who is indeed?
See, that's a much better transition. Good for you, Zach.
To the left, you will meet your doom unless you go to the left. Thank you, everybody, for tuning into this episode. We very much hope you enjoyed it, more than Donna enjoyed the parallel timeline, at least. Next week's the season finale, guys. We're getting really close to the attendance run here, so be sure to subscribe to this podcast to come along with us for the rest of this journey. Give us a like or 5 stars wherever you're listening right now, and if you leave us a nice review on Apple Podcasts, I share those on our Twitter as soon as I see them. Speaking of, you can follow us on Twitter, Blue Sky Threads, and Instagram at WIMDPod. That's WIMDPOD. Next week, Cassie gets a surprise visit from an old villain. So we'll see you next Tuesday, because your Tuesdays are now Whose Days.